Hello and welcome to the first Fantasy Olympian podcast for Rio 2016. We are thrilled to be back for our second Olympic cycle doing the podcast. This is one of your hosts and one of the co-founders of Fantasy Olympian, Brian Clark. And joining me on the other line, as always, is Jeremy Bridgman. Jeremy, we made it to Rio. How are you doing?
Hey, Brian. I'm doing great. I've really been looking forward to this for the last couple of years, and it's good to be back on the phone with you. I can't believe we've made it, and, 12 years going strong.
That's right. Yeah, we're real excited about it, and also we're excited about the fact that today, for the first time on the Fantasy Olympian podcast, we have our very first guest. And joining us now is our overall champion for the last two Olympic cycles. As far as I know, the only person to be our overall champion two different times. It's Carrie Reed. Carrie, how are you?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you tonight?
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Carrie will be chiming in as we go along, but the biggest thing to get Carrie here to do is, particularly for a lot of you who may be doing Fantasy Olympians for the first time, she's going to give you some, but probably not all, of her great tips.
I can't give them all away, Brian.
Nor should you, but Brian, you and I are in the presence of a greatness. So, Carrie, thank you for joining us. I think each year we expand the amount of people that are playing Fantasy Olympian, and for a lot of people that are coming new, I think they're really going to benefit from some of your insights. So thank you for joining us.
Well, I don't want you guys to oversell me. I'm really just a giant nerd that loves the Olympics, and the fact that you created this site was sort of like my pipe dream come true, because I found some other people that liked it just as much as me.
Excellent. Well, so before we get into all the details, I just want to give a very quick, 30-second version for anyone who's new to Fantasy Olympics for this cycle of, where we started and, where this all came from and how it works. So, to start off, this idea kind of formulated among four of us friends who grew up together in Ohio. We kind of came up with the idea and did this for the first time back in 2006. This is actually, at that time we had four people, and we were kind of just manually keeping scores on a Blogspot blog. I don't even know, does Blogspot still exist? That's been a while. That's been over there. But, we've grown over the years. It's a hobby for us. It's not anything we make money on, but we always think it's cool every couple of years to see all the folks come out. And over the years, we've had the opportunity to affiliate with some great web designers who have made us look a lot more professional probably than we actually are. And the last Olympics, we had more than 1,500 people participate from around the world, so that was awesome. Now, if you're signing up for this or you're just coming across our podcast and you're saying, participate in what exactly? The way the game works is, everybody, it's a fantasy-style draft, just like you would do for fantasy football or fantasy baseball, something like that. And you're drafting a team of Olympians. Now, for the summer games, because this is just a hobby and because we can't spend hours, days, and weeks on this as much as we'd like to, we are limited only to American athletes. For the winter games, we're able to bring in the international athletes. But here's just the Americans. And you're drafting a team of 10 athletes to try to get you the most points. Now, how do you get points? Well, you get medals. And you want that'll be 3 points for a gold medal, 2 points for a silver medal, and 1 point for the bronze for each of your athletes. So what that means is that the people with the highest value are going to be the ones who have multiple events. Think historically you're the Michael Phelpses of the world. Then you're going to want to kind of move into people who are guaranteed gold medals. Think maybe the U.S. women's rowing team or something like that. And then later on, you might take more of a flyer on people who, you aren't as sure about. We kind of do a snake draft. We do, to keep it kind of even across the leagues, we try to get everybody to cap their league at 10 people. You can have more, but you won't be eligible for our, mythical overall title, so you won't have a chance to challenge Carrie's spot on the throne. So, that's kind of how we do it. Jeremy, did I miss anything there to the very brief description of how Fantasy Olympian works.
Yeah, I would just add that when it comes to team events, so think about women's soccer, that's only draftable once. If you think about a track athlete, you can draft that one particular athlete, and if he runs in a relay, in addition to his individual results, you get medals for both. But, for example, with the U.S. women's soccer, that's draftable once. You can't draft Alex Morgan and Carly Lloyd separately. So if it's purely a team event, it's draftable once. If it's individuals who come together to compete as a team, you draft the individuals, and there's potential for multiple medals there. That's the only pickup in terms of how you would draft the athletes.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jeremy. Yeah, that's a question we get asked a lot, so I appreciate you bringing that up. And if there's one you're not clear about, it should be on the site, but if you can't find it, definitely hit us up. We try to be responsive to email. You actually might find us faster on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those are Fantasy Olympian on Twitter, and Fantasy Olympian on Twitter, and Facebook, it's just Fantasy Olympian. You can find us either way. So, without further ado, Carrie, I know you've been poring over your spreadsheet for weeks and watching all the qualifiers. So what do you think are some of the biggest things that people need to be thinking about heading into Rio if they're going to be doing a draft?
Well, obviously, you know, the high point people are going to be your swimmers and your track and field athletes because they are the people that just have the most events. Again, as Jeremy just said, you know, the women's soccer team is only going to get one medal, but Michael Phelps stands to get a lot. So obviously those are your top drafts. But I have never actually, which is something that I'm pretty nerdily proud of, I've never had above a 5 seed in the draft. And so it's been kind of sneaky trying to figure out ways to, you know, offset Michael Phelps and Ryan Lochte's out there because I've never had them on my team. So what a lot of people tend to think about is who they want for their first or second pick, but they kind of, by the time they get down to their seventh, eighth, or ninth pick, they don't know any of the athletes anymore. So something that I always tell people is know what sports we're going to dominate in, even if you don't know who they are. And I always say that America's really good at guns. And for the most part, the people that make up our shooting team are like Army Rangers and Marines, who just decide to take the summer off and go win a gold medal. So you can pretty much guarantee that anybody that's shooting a gun for America is going to come home with a medal. So that's a pretty solid thing to keep in your back pocket for your late-round draft. That is pretty much always going to get you at least a couple points. And even if you don't know who their names are, if you can find their sports, I think it's a safe bet.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I think some of those guys you might be looking at there are Vincent Hancock or a, I'm blank on his name right now. I know there's at least another cup. Matt Emmons is one. You know,
yeah.
And Joshua Richmond. Those are all guys that, you know, I think we've got projected to bring home at least one gold medal. But, yeah, I know some of them have won medals before. Yeah, so that's definitely a good place to be looking. Mm-hmm. I noticed you emphasized the swimmers and the track athletes at the top, which is, you know, has historically always been the top of our medal board. But I can tell you, and I don't know if you disagree, so we can discuss, but I can tell you, having just finished the medal list last night, the person at the top of my list is not a swimmer or a track and field athlete.
Right. It's an interesting year because, you know, I think when we were going into London in 2012, Lochte and Phelps were both in a ton of events, and that was sort of Missy Franklin at her height, and we had a lot of swimmers in 2012 that were in a lot of events. And while all those swimmers, for the most part, are returning this year, they're not in as many events. And what is also strange is at the top of your list, and I think it's a really smart pick, is Simone Biles. And this is the first time I think anybody is anticipating that one gymnast could get 3 or 4 individual events as well as a team event medal. Normally, you know, you have gymnasts that are great at vault, that they stand a decent chance at the individual all around and are likely going to get a team medal. But I can't think of anybody, I mean, unless you're going back to the 80s, where, like, you have, you know, Mary Lou Retton, or before that with Nadia Comaneci, you don't tend to have athletes in the gymnastics world that can really stand a chance to bring home a gold on more than one apparatus. So it's going to be pretty exciting just to see what she does, and whoever gets her on their team is going to be pretty lucky.
In 1980, did you have Mary Lou Retton at the top of your draft board?
I just want to jump in and say I think that the way the potential draft board shook out for us, I think it was like 4 years ago when it was clear that Michael Phelps was the number one take overall. I think Simone Biles is the number one take overall. Many think that she's the greatest female gymnast of all time. She's the first world champion 3 years in a row, which, according to the HuffPo, hasn't happened in 42 years. So going into this, she has the highest expectations. To your point, she has the highest chance to medal in multiple events. I really think that it's the smart overall number one. Whether it pans out is remains to be seen, but what it does mean is that there's value to be had for any of her other gymnastics teammates. Because not only are they in the running for the overall, but you could pick up some individual medals as well. So I think the gymnasts are top of the board for a lot of people. Where 4 years ago, that was the swim team that fell standard.
And to talk about little, you know, tricks and secrets, you know, like I said, I've never gotten the first draft pick, and I'm not banking on getting Simone this time. So in a weird way, what you start to do is figure out ways to cut the lead that your Michael Phelps or Simone Biles is going to have against your team. So if you can get one of the other gymnasts, you know that at least Simone is going to win a gold for the team event. But when your person wins a team for a gold event, that lowers the difference in points between your person and Simone. Because if you can at least sort of double on any gold that person is going to get, then it makes the gap between your scores smaller. So if you get somebody else on the gymnastic team, it's going to make your – Simone will not be kicking your butt just as much if you can get somebody else on the team too.
So, you know, we've talked about Phelps, obviously – over several Olympic cycles here, he's been the big story. This is kind of his farewell tour, and I know, at least in the swimming community, and for a guy who has won as many medals and as many events as he has, this Olympic seems almost kind of like an afterthought, you know, in terms of how many medals he's actually going to be bringing home. And that's why I was kind of surprised when, after I had put together my whole list, I looked up and suddenly he's still sitting there, at least on the big board, predicted medals at fourth. Do we really think that Michael Phelps is still that valuable of a draft pick for this game, or is that an overinflated position for him?
Gary, I think it's a rough spot. I think if you're not going to get the number one pick, you know, it's like taking Peyton Manning going into his last year. It's not going to be as great, but are you going to regret not taking him at that point? So I think it's a pretty accurate, you know, where he needs to be just based on history, just based on the fact that he, you know, took some time off, he's, you know, amped up for this. So I think it's a fair, you know, projection for him. Whoever takes him around that time is going to be taking a big flyer. So it just depends on what you think the rest of the draft is going to shake out. But I think it's a fair projection. I don't know what's going to happen, though.
But I think when you watch the trials, I mean, he's still got it. You know, I mean, I think it's easy to maybe underestimate just how amazing of an athlete he is. I mean, we all know what he's been up to the last 4 years. It's not like he's been healthy living and working out every day, and he still pulls it out when he needs to. So, yeah, it's not going to be a repeat of London by any means, but I think anybody that has him on their team, it's definitely going to be a big help. And if nothing else, it's going to be fun to cheer for.
Now, staying in the pool, and I'll go to my Olympic researcher extraordinaire, Carrie, because maybe you've found something I couldn't. You know, I was looking over the swimming team, and Andy, one of the things about this year's team that I think makes it a little bit different than years past is it's a very deep team, so they've got a lot of potential medalists. In a lot of events, but it's more spread out. So, you know, you have each person doing one or two events instead of, you know, maybe five or six. But one thing that that wasn't clear to me and that I wasn't able to figure out is, you know, I see who's doing the freestyle medleys, but I wasn't able to determine who's going to be participating in the team medley relays. Do you know how that's determined? Okay.
Yeah, they don't announce that actually until after the individual events, and they sort of just pick the best people. So that's another tip kind of going into it is it's going to be a bonus point because you're not able to really predict who is going to be on the medley team. But if you have the number one butterflyer in the world, the number one in the 100 butterfly, odds are that person is also going to be on the medley rewrite, and that's a chance to kind of make up ground and pick up extra bonus points that nobody's really anticipating. But the actual medley relay team won't be announced until after the individual events are done. But again, there's some safe bets. You know, Phelps is probably going to be in it.
Right. Well, I was going to say, speaking of the best butterflyer in the world, that is Phelps, right? Yes.
Yes, it is.
At least historically. Well, at least definitely in the U.S., for sure. So,
absolutely.
So we talk a lot about these single event athletes who are, you know, kind of our locks for gold medals. And, you know, if you look down the list, there are dozens probably here of, maybe not dozens, quite a few single athletes who have, you know, they're projected to get one gold medal in one event. Who are some of the locks do you guys think are that you can just pencil in, they're going to get a gold medal. If you can get a shot at them in a mid-round, grab them. I'll start with Jeremy.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. I think the one that I've got circled is Serena Williams. She's a lock, I think, for, you know, certainly three, but probably more. She's coming off a great year. She's empowered. She's ready to go. If you watch the Serena documentary about her, she keeps her gold medals kind of in a drawer to the side. She's looking to toss a fourth or a fifth into there. So I'm penciling her in as someone that I would overpay, maybe take a little higher up, because we're guaranteed a few points there. Another group that I'm looking at are just any of the weightlifters, because the Russian weightlifters are straight out of the competition. So I'm kind of pumping up the weightlifting, pun intended, pumping up the weightlifting values a little bit higher than I would have, because I think there's some later round steals to be had there where you might not have given them a look, but without the Russians in the competition, I think there's some chance for some later round medals there.
Yeah.
Kerry, who are you seeing as a lock for a gold medal? You know, maybe they've only got that one event, but you know you're going to get points there.
I think the safest bet possibly ever is men's basketball. Off the top, that's a pretty safe one. But then one that people aren't always aware of, we have one of the best judo athletes in the world, Kayla Harrison, female athlete. She won in London, and she's projected to win again. It would be a major upset if she didn't. Going back to the shooters, Vincent Hancock, he's heading into, I believe, his third Olympics and also probably going to walk away with the gold. I'm actually going to differ from Jeremy on Serena, and that's because I feel like she's a great athlete, absolutely. She's won in the past, but I feel like she's a little bit less predictable than some of the other sports. For instance, you know, women's rowing is always pretty solid. U.S. soccer women's is pretty good. I feel like with Serena, with tennis being, you know, coming off of so many big events recently, there's a bit more of a chance for her to maybe not get those 3 points. But that's just my personal opinion, and that's honestly because I've gotten burned by Serena in the past.
That's a really fair point. I do want to not skip over the fact that the most guaranteed 3 points is the women's soccer. And I think it's just how you think the draft is going to fall. But that is a, you know, in the bank 3 points. As far as I'm concerned, they are the U.S. national team, and I refer to the guys of the U.S. men's national team. You got to have that qualifier for them. So they are a lock for three. It just depends on where you think you can get them. And if you're looking for, you know, something maybe a higher value, maybe you try to take a Serena if you think But if it's falling the right way, you know you're going to get three out of the win in soccer. So you're right to just sort of draft strategy plays into this as well.
I'd say in general, all of the women's teams, anytime I can grab one of those, particularly in a mid-round, I'm going to jump on that. I mean, Terry mentioned men's basketball, but, men's basketball has finished out of the gold medal more recently than women's basketball. The men's basketball team is a great team made up of all-stars, but, we really left our best guys at home. There's no LeBron, there's no Steph Curry, that sort of thing. But, the women's team is an all-time team. It's basically a Hall of Fame roster, and they're going up against people who are nowhere near as qualified. Jeremy mentioned the U.S. women's soccer team. And then if you go to the labeled on our sheet as the U.S. women's eight, but it's the eight-woman rowing team, there's actually a great article in Sports Illustrated last week if anybody wants to check that out. And these women come together in a small town and just eat, sleep, and breathe rowing. And they sign up on four-year cycles, and they just go out. And they've won the last several Olympic cycles. They're undefeated over certain periods of time. They just really put it in, and the team plays a really safe bet. Another one who's on my radar is over on the wrestling mat, Jordan Burrow coming back and defending Olympic gold medalist from London. I think he's lost, I don't want to misspeak here, but I think he may have lost once since London. If I were going to be putting my draft pick down on it, I wouldn't anticipate another loss to come over the next few weeks. So he's another one I've got my eye on. So going through the draft then further, if you get down at the end, who are some people who maybe they're not projected right now to win gold, maybe they're not even projected to medal, maybe there's someone most people have never even heard of, but I'll start with Terry on this. Who's down, at the very bottom of your draft board? You're like, well, maybe if they're there in the last round, maybe I'll take a flyer on this person. They might be able to get me something, even though it doesn't necessarily look like it at this point.
Well, like I said, my strategy is always anybody, if I'm at the bottom and I can't find anything, I always go with a shooter because I think, again, we are very strong in that category, and it's never let me down, to be honest. But we've mentioned a lot of the people that don't have a lot of name recognition, but Jordan Burroughs, Kayla Harrison, those are the people that there's a lot of the people down at the bottom of the list that I think are going to be pretty much locked for at least 3 points. And something that I think is worth noting, I might have, the site high scores, we talk about that, I think it's under 50. You know what I mean? It's not like everybody's scoring in the hundreds. So if you just took 10 individuals or 10 people that you knew were a lock for 3 points, you'd be in 30. So that's, you can make smart moves by drafting your locks early on, too.
Yeah, that's a great point. Jeremy, you have anybody down at the bottom of your draft board, maybe some surprises you think might pop up?
I mentioned the weightlifters earlier, just on principle of the alleged top competition being out. But some of the other ones that I take a flyer on are more just like, first of all, I'm more excited to see the events than I am to actually believe for them to come and actually medal.
Yeah, that makes sense. A few other, one that's just kind of personal for me, probably be personal for Carrie, too, when she hears what it is, but there's a wrestler this year named Jaden Cox out of the University of Missouri who will be competing. So I might slip him in at the bottom of my draft just to give a cheer for old Mizzou at some point during the Olympics. It's always hard from what I understand when you guys make that jump, even as elite college wrestlers as Jaden was, going into the international competition. But I know he's been killing it at some of the qualifiers and some of the lead-up events, so that could be worth one, particularly if you're a Mizzou fan, to take a little flyer on that. Another one that's you know, lower on our board than she usually is, just because she doesn't have the same partner anymore. Carrie Walsh is back out on the beach volleyball court again, going for yet another gold medal, but this time she's teamed up with April Ross. And, I don't think the two of them are considered quite as elite and dominant as Carrie Walsh and Misty May were in their prime. But, anytime Carrie Walsh is out there, you know, she's got a chance to win it because she's done it over and over and over again.
Literally over and over and over.
Yeah.
Brian,
I was
fast. I was looking over my list, and not seeing Walsh trainer, I skipped over it. Like, yeah, of course that has to be on everyone's radar. Just not seeing that iconic pairing throws you off a little bit. So that's why you got to really pay attention to the way the athletes are listed this year.
Yes.
We have some great wrestlers. We mentioned Jordan Burroughs earlier, but I'm also keeping, I would pick up Kyle Snyder or Adeline Gray.
Yes.
Both of
whom
are, you know, doing great in their fields and are definitely predicted to win gold in their events. Another lesser known swimmer that I just sort of love her and I like to have her on my team is Dana Vollmer, who, she won gold in London and it was, I wouldn't say it a total surprise, but it wasn't a lock by any means. And she's one of those individuals who, you know, she took some time off, wasn't sure if she was coming back, but she's coming back strong. She's, in the meantime, gotten married, had a kid. We have a lot of swimmers bringing their kids to Rio this year, so I think they want to win medals for them. But Dana is someone who isn't predicted to be a big points person, but she might surprise you, and again, this is one of those individuals that might wind up being on a medal-winning relay team.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, in general, the swimmers I find so interesting because it really seems to be, you know, unless you're Michael Phelps, and obviously he's on another plane, it really seems to be something that can come and go so quickly. I mean, you've got, you know, Missy Franklin, who 4 years ago was the darling of the Olympics, one of the highest point total people, and she's back this year, and there's really no buzz surrounding her at all. You know, it's just like, oh, yeah, Missy's still here. And, you know, she's in a few different events. She's not really predicted to win any of them. And from what I understand, that's probably the right prediction. But at the same time, anybody who has risen to that level before, you got to kind of keep an eye on the fact that they may be able to do it again.
Right.
Now, so that gets us through talking about the draft. I think everybody, you know, hopefully picked up some good tips and whatnot. Now, just to have a little bit more fun, what is the biggest thing, whether it be an individual athlete or a performance or an event, and it doesn't have to be limited to the Americans this time, what's the biggest thing you are looking forward to seeing in Rio this year? Carrie, what's yours?
I am excited to watch Simone. I think it's going to be a moment in an Olympics that is going to be historic for a lot of reasons. I think women's artistic gymnastics just has a hold on people for a reason and has forever. And we love our American gymnasts, the Magnificent Seven on their 20th anniversary. This is sort of a hot year, even more so than a lot for women's gymnastics, and I am excited to see, and I really, truly hope that Simone, you know, doesn't buckle under the pressure because there's a lot on her, and everybody's talking about her, and there's some high expectations, but I am looking forward to see what she can do, and I think it would be amazing to watch her sweep 6 goals. I don't think she can do it, but she has a chance, and it would be unbelievable.
Jeremy, what are you looking forward to?
Well, obviously what Carrie said, but on a personal level, there are 2 things that I'm really looking forward to. One, as a amateur racket sports enthusiast, I'm always looking forward to ping pong. Although that's more of a baseball. as a basement player, that's always a favorite. But when it comes to American athletes, you know, table tennis, badminton, and team handball, we haven't even sniffed the podium. So that's more of a, hey, I get to watch this recreational thing, you know, every 4 years. So selfishly, I'm going to enjoy watching those. But from an actual sport legitimate competition standpoint, I'm excited that rugby is back. You know, Team USA features like a New England Patriots, you know, a special teams player, and the rest of the world is very dominant in that sport, and they're going to play sevens. So I'm really excited to see that play out in terms of global competition. So you've got a sport that I can watch and a sport that I pretend to do. I'll let you sort out which is which.
I want to jump on Jeremy's point about the sports that you can watch and have fun with. That's one of the best things about the Olympics is there are so many sports that aren't really big in America, and it's easy to never even know that they exist. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's 11:30 at night on a Tuesday, and you're watching Bob Costas introduce rhythmic gymnastics, and you're like, what, there's ribbons in the Olympics? I mean, it is so fun about the Olympics because there are so many sports that you get to kind of experience and see and learn and see them sort of grow. And like you said, there are some things that come back to America. Rugby, you know, ping pong is really hot right now. And it's fun to see sports kind of blossom in the United States.
Well, rhythmic gymnastics, speaking of the sport I can do, you can see me with a ribbon. Nice to behold. You know, I'm definitely looking forward to kind of seeing some of the old guard, so to speak, come out and show what they've still got. I mean, we already talked about Michael Phelps stepping outside the United States. It's always amazing to watch Usain Bolt do what he does. And, you know, see if he can make the unprecedented feat of winning three more gold medals at this Olympics and right off into the sunset is, you know, probably the greatest of all time at his events. You know, I know he was actually hurt during the Jamaican qualifiers, so, you know, I hope that doesn't linger. Although, it's also, I mean, I think we can't go wrong with that one because it would be awesome to see Bolt go out on top, but on the flip side, his biggest challengers are probably American. And I always love seeing an American upset story. So if Justin Gatlin or you know, one of those other guys is able to catch him and beat him, I'd love that too. So I think those will be fun nights anytime those guys are out on the track. And then just in general, anytime the USA teams that are out there, I mean the U.S. women's soccer team, as we've talked about, is awesome to watch. And then ever since the Dream Team days in 92, I've just loved watching USA men's basketball. So I'll be definitely making sure I tune in for all those. So one final thing to kind of lead us on, I wanted to touch on the topic of Jeremy's blog post today, because I think it gets to what a lot of people are probably feeling going into this Olympics. And I'll let Jeremy kind of lay out what his point was. But, you know, I know anytime you talk to anybody about the Olympics right now, within, you know, the first 30 to 60 seconds of talking about it, somebody's going to shrug and be like, if they even have it, or talk about Rio, or talk about corruption or something like that. And I know for those of us who really enjoy the Olympics and for us who have this hobby built around the Olympics, that can be kind of a frustrating development. Jeremy, why don't you kind of walk us through what your thoughts were?
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, it was just weighing really heavily recently with the reports. We go through this in the lead up to every Olympics, and you see the reports about the human rights abuses and what certain countries have done to bend over backwards to force the games to happen. It all comes from the mandates of the IOC and what they require in order to place an Olympic competition in your country. And we need to acknowledge that this is going on. We need to acknowledge that this is not a healthy operating body. We need to acknowledge that the system needs to be fixed. But at the same time, I don't want to lose our excitement for these athletes. Like it or not, the Olympics do happen all of the time. The aftermath is something that we can continue to analyze and look up. If you want the real kick in the gut, watch the latest episode of HBO's Real Sport. Really lays out pretty clearly. But I don't want us to lose sight of the athletes. And I think that's what we just spent the last half an hour talking about, is the dedication that these young men and women have to their sport, have to this contest, and what it means to them. And what I just kind of hope maybe in our little corner of the world is that our humble fantasy game can really focus on the athlete, focus on the competition, focus on what it really means to come together as a country, and support someone in a unified effort. So this isn't trying to compartmentalize or excuse the actions of the IOC or the countries that are creating these atrocities to put up a nice new stadium. The point is, it's going to happen. Let's celebrate the athletes and their accomplishments rather than the Olympic trademark themselves. So we just kind of need to talk about that every year as much as we can. Hopefully it can change along the way. But really, we just need to focus on the athletes and what they dedicate their lives to and how great of a moment this is for them and for us as fellow countrymen.
I agree with that, and it's interesting. I was recently had an opportunity to talk to someone from Brazil, and I'm sure, just like I, as an Olympics fan, get tired of talking about, like, oh, what's going on in Rio, and I'm sure she was exhausted by this question, but, you know, I felt like I had to ask, I'm like, so what's up with the Olympics? Like, what's the story on this? And, she had an interesting perspective, I thought, which that she thought that it was both good and bad, because, you know, obviously the bad is everything that's been talked about, any sort of human rights violations and things like that that have gone on, or waste of money or corruption that's been tied to the games being there. But the way she viewed it is, you know, it's an opportunity to put a spotlight on the nation of Brazil. And, you know, it's not like a lot of this corruption wasn't going on anyway. And so this is an opportunity for the world to come take a look and to see both the positive and negative of Brazil all at the same time. And, you know, hopefully when that bright light is shining on them, you know, one, you know, the people and the athletes can rise to the equation, and, you know, it can also expose some of that corruption. So, you know, I thought that was a great point and kind of made me feel, a little bit better about the situation, because, you know, in a way it's helpful. I mean, I think there's often this belief that, well, you know, the Olympics come in and, you know, yeah, it's kind of fun for us watching at home on TV, but in the meantime, it's like tearing up the city and leaving them bankrupt or whatever the case may be. And so she at least has some perspective to say that it wasn't necessarily all bad for them. So,
And I think, the back-to-back drama of Sochi followed up with Rio, both of which have been, and obviously we haven't seen all that's going to happen in Rio, but especially in Russia, there was so much negative press about everything going on. They weren't getting things done in time. They had used all this money improperly. And we're hearing sort of echoes of the same going on down in Brazil. I would like to think that having this back-to-back instance might maybe play into the IOC's decision-making in the future. I mean, maybe I'm looking at it with rose-colored glasses, but people are aware of this. And I don't know that the world is really going to be able to sit back for another one, two, or three Olympiads and watch countries sort of go through these struggles like they have the last 4 years. So hopefully having Sochi and then following it up with Rio and having the global spotlight on these problems might make, you know, the ideas of a host city that has a sustainability plan or better infrastructure going into it, maybe that can start to happen in the future.
I think those are all great points, and it's a great point to leave us. I think we're all going to see how everything plays out over the next few weeks, with the venues and those important social issues, but also with the athletes. We're going to see, you know, who does rise to the occasion, who of these, you know, legends can keep their legend going, what new faces are going to emerge. You know, we know that someone out of this group will be the next, you know, America's sweetheart, so to speak. I think the odds are on that being Simone Biles, but it could be someone else, and that's always part of the fun. So, I think until next time, we'll try to have another podcast sometime in the middle of the games, and Jeremy and I will be back with you. And Jeremy, thanks so much for joining us. It was great to have an additional perspective. And probably a smarter perspective. So.
Well, it was really fun. It was really fun. Thanks for having me.
All right. All right, until next time. This has been the Fantasy Olympian Podcast.